listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Today we have, I intentionally asked him not to tell me his last name so I could try it, Brad Tusnach.
Wow, that is very good, sir.
Is it actually?
Yeah, pretty damn close, man. That's Tuinar is how I say it. So
Tuinar?
Tuinar. Yeah, I think you got it.
Tuinar. Are you French?
I am. Well, my family was from France, a couple of generations back. So
oh, that's good. Well, that's sort of a thing on the podcast now is we only have French Canadians on. We had Etienne from Missive, who is from Montreal. So only French Canadians come on the podcast from this point forward.
I mean, I'm French Canadian. So there, look a little bit, my grandma.
Are you really?
Marchand from Montreal.
All right. Well, we'll allow you on then.
You should rename it to Syntax.
That'd be great. Today we have Brad on to talk to us about migrating, deploying, and hosting WordPress. We'll talk about and introduce him in just a second. Today we are sponsored by Netlify, which is going to host your website. It's like the easiest way ever to host a Gatsby website or a static site or pretty much anything you want to host. You throw it up on there and it works out well. And a new sponsor today is Hasura, which is a instant real-time GraphQL API that sits on top of a Postgres database, which is pretty nifty. We'll talk about them partway through the episode. So welcome, Brad. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. I'm always happy to have Canadians on the podcast. I was laughing because I'm in Ontario, and people always say like, oh, you're on the East Coast. And I said like, no, like even just because we line up with New York doesn't mean we're on the East Coast. Like there's a whole lot more Canada to the East.
I still feel like I, even after you say that, I'd still consider it to be the East Coast just because it's relation to New York. Yeah.
No. It's definitely Eastern Canada, but it's not the coast. Man. There's no ocean in Ontario.
No.
And don't forget about all of Quebec, also the second largest province in the country.
Yeah. Some of us do forget about Quebec. Anyways, you're from Nova Scotia, which makes you a Maritimer.
That's right.
So, you want to introduce yourself? What is it that you do? I know you have a company. You actually are, I think, our very first sponsor on this podcast many years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've been a fan of your work, Wes. And so when you said you're going to start a podcast, I was like, I want in on that. So my company is Delicious Brains Inc. We do three plugins for WordPress and a SaaS app called SpinUp WP. And we've just launched two of those products this year, actually. So we went from having two plugins to having three and a SaaS app just in 2019. So lots of changes for us. We're a remote team of 10 people. And so we've got some in the UK, some in Pennsylvania, and a couple in Ontario, actually.
Oh, awesome.
And then myself. And we've been going since, I guess, 2013 is when we launched our first product. So been at it for a little while now.
So when you started that company, was the thought process, this is the worst part about working in WordPress, let me try to make it better? Or did you just like to be masochistic? Because like when I personally work with WordPress, I like want to stay, like the deploying process of everything is just always my least favorite part of it. So the fact that you would make that your business.
Yeah. I was actually working at an agency in Vancouver, and I had the problem of, you know, going from dev to staging to production. And so I cobbled together, I actually hacked up a plugin that I found that did exports of the database. And I hacked it to export, but also do a find and replace to kind of make the migration to other environments super easy. And then I just threw it up on WordPress.org and just it sat there for years, probably 3 or 4 years actually, before I kind of realized, oh, this thing has a following now. Maybe there's a business here, you know, maybe there's something I could turn this into. So I did a little bit of customer research. So I added like a sidebar to the free plugin and asked people if they'd be willing to pay for like, you know, the push and pull features and some support. And people, you know, there was, I got like 300 responses before I decided, hey, there's, I think there is something here. So
nice.
We started coding. Yeah.
Interesting. So maybe I should real quick just explain what these are for people that don't know. The big plugin you have is WP Migrate DB Pro, which allows you to push and pull your database and also your files as well from local to production or staging and vice versa. And it's a huge tool in many WordPress developers' toolbox because of how painful that was. Like I still remember the scripts that I wrote to find and replace strings in a SQL file when I was doing a lot of WordPress, and it's really painful, especially if you goof it up.
That's the scariest thing too, right? Because not even just manually editing the database, but like once you get into writing a script that, you know, will modify all these records, yeah, that really scares me when I, especially if it's my own work, I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to break this or not.
Yeah, there's weird stuff that you don't even realize that we've tackled for you in that plugin too. So like when you go from like MySQL 5.0 to 5.1 or something, there was some weird difference between those two databases that we had to accommodate. I can't remember what it was now, but you know, we were just handling that. We added that feature in. So yeah, there's just weirdness basically when you're migrating from one environment to another. So that we, you know, therein lies the opportunity, you know, for us to take care of all that stuff for you.
Yeah. And especially as workflows change and become more modern. I remember that was like a huge thing because I was more of a Drupal person in my agency work. And by the time we were into WordPress, there was like sort of like a deploy person and you just push it off to them. But in the Drupal world, that was such a huge thing when Git was becoming more popular and version control in general. How do you version control your database records? Because so many of these things, you don't just want to do a database pull and then just throw up the database. You'd want to keep it all either in version control or you want to pull them out. And somebody came up with this really great plugin that essentially took all of your database records and stored them as a custom Drupal plugin. And then all you had to do was install that Drupal plugin on the new database. It pulled in all of the data. And it was like really super fascinating. It was never, it never got to the point where it was like very seamless or excellent, but it solved a lot of those issues. And I remember there being such a huge void of like, okay, I get that we should be using version control here. I get we should be using these modern deployment practices, but I don't necessarily know how to do it. So I find tools like yours to be endlessly valuable.
All right. So I maybe should go through the other two plugins real quick as well. These are two I've never used myself, but it looks like you have one called WP Offload Media, which will allow you to offload your images from that local uploads directory to something else like a S3 or DigitalOcean. Is that right?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It allows you to get your the media in your WordPress media library off of your server and onto object storage. The reason I made that plugin actually is because I was, again, this is just a fork of another plugin that I needed because I was load balancing a WordPress site. And what happens is if you're uploading your files to server one, and then... you know, they don't end up on server two, right? So then you need to either set up some kind of like shared drive between the servers, or in this case, we just upload the images directly to S3 and then you've got, you know, everything's in object storage, so no problems. So that was kind of the reason for that. But now, you know, there's a bunch of reasons why our customers use it. It's kind of, some people use it as like a redundant backup. Some people use it as a, like if they're serving video files or like have huge files, then they want to get those off the server anyway. So there's all kinds of use cases that people want it for.
Yeah, I would imagine in lots of WordPress instances is it doesn't make sense to have your media on the same server that's hosting up your WordPress, especially if you're moving towards one of these hosts that are, what's the word for a host that you can't change the files once it's on the server? like a Heroku or a Now or something like that. What's the word, Scott?
Oh, immutable?
Immutable hosting. That's what I'm looking for.
I've never heard that. I've never heard it be referred to as that.
Yeah, me neither.
Immutable hosting would be that, like, you have like a WordPress website and you deploy it to your host. And then once it's there, once it's running, the files on that host can't change, right? Because like that's your deploy. And if you want to, you have to deploy a new instance if you want to change something about that website. And WordPress is this kind of like this weird thing where like you can deploy it, but then like also it can also change on the server because of media uploads and like plugins get updated on the server. And then you run into sort of this hellish spot where things are changed on both ends.
Yeah, and it's kind of a security dilemma as well, right? That PHP has access to change the PHP.
yeah, you're right.
So like a lot of managed WordPress hosts will actually lock that down. So I know on WP Engine and now Flywheel, because WP Engine acquired Flywheel recently. So if you had a plugin, say, that received an API request from an external source, it doesn't have access to change the PHP files. But if you're executing a PHP file when you're logged in, then that PHP file does have access to change the file system. So they're limiting it to logged in users, which certainly helps the situation, but throws a wrench in the gears for plugins like mine who are trying to do things remotely, right? So got some extra work to do for their platform as a result of that.
That's not easy, I bet. Why don't we start there? Let's talk about like migrating a WordPress. I'm super in this headspace right now because I maintain a number of different WordPress websites. And I spent a couple of days last week just totally redoing some WordPress stuff. And I had to do the whole song and dance of, okay, so the client has changed their remote version with both content and media uploads. And I have my own version, which is in a Git repo. So I had to pull it all down. But then I had been working on it first. Like I had like been doing some dev on it. And then I'm like, oh, I need to pull the content. And then I ran into the situation where like some of my custom fields and some of my custom post types were in the database. So I had to make sure to bring those to code first. And then, and I still lost stuff at the end of the day. And I was like, oh, this is hard. So like, can you tell us like, what's the best way to migrate a WordPress where you have a remote, you maybe even have a staging and you have your local, and at any given time, data and code is changing on all three of those things. How does that even work?
Yeah, it doesn't.
And this is not like a WordPress problem either. This is like this happens with any CMS or anything where things are changing at any given time.
Yes, it is a CMS problem. It's not traditionally an app problem. If you have an app, it's pretty rare that you run into the situation where you're going to be changing a lot of the data locally, that you're going to need to move that data to another environment. Yeah. It's usually just schema changes that you need to kind of track with an app. But yeah, it's CMS. CMSs are a bugger for this. Like, yeah, because of a lot of the data that's stored in the database is like structural, right? So like you just mentioned custom fields, which that's stored in the database. Yeah, it's a problem. And like pages, like if you need to add some new pages to your site that you're doing some development on, those will be going in the database as well. So we actually worked on solving this problem for almost 3 years, and threw a lot of resources at it, and then pulled the plug on it completely. And so it's one of those heartbreaking stories. But we did when we set out, the goal was like a moonshot, right? Because we knew this was a super hard problem that no one had solved, right? And in the end, you know, we didn't make it to the moon, right? So it's one of those things, like if you're going to have a big lofty goal like that, sometimes you're just not going to make it. So what we recommend now is scripting, which is essentially the way that tool was working. And so let's say you need to create new custom fields in advanced custom fields. Like you would, instead of like doing that via the UI, you would script it in your code with PHP, like creating those fields so that you can run it in staging and then production when you need to, without like overwriting the database or anything like that. And when you refresh your local copy of the database, you can just blow away everything and then just run that script again, and you get your, you can kind of do a dry run of your your live deploy if you have that script that you can just run. So you get that huge advantage. Yeah. So it's, of course, it's more work, right? To like, to create these scripts, but you get some pretty massive advantages by doing it. So that's what we recommend. That's what we do on our site. We've got, all of our sites are on WordPress, and you know, whenever we're doing development, that's what we do. We just create a script and then run it when we deploy, and it works great. It's just more work.
Yeah, I think the benefit of that also is that you get your fields and your post types in your version control, and that traditionally has not been something that like has people have been as part of version control. Like, oh yeah, you got to go in there and make new fields and make sure they're exactly these names and exactly these post types, right? And I was happy. It was like 500 lines of code to put them into my theme, but it worked great, right?
Yeah, there is a little hack that we use once in a while too, if we're being lazy, which is so what we'll do is, let's say we need a new page or a new post for some piece of work that we're doing, we'll just go to the live site and we'll create that on the live site, but just leave it in draft.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll maybe script switching it from draft to published in our script. So it's kind of like a little shortcut, and it's just, yeah, it's way easier than scripting the whole creation of a post.
That's a good point. I like that. All right, let's switch to talking about like migrating your database as well. So when you have a local version of your website that has the updated theme as well as some updated content that is in the database, what does that look like when you need to then push that to a remote WordPress install, that to either your staging or to your production? Because like the way I usually do it is I'll just pull everything down. And luckily the websites I work on, where I can just tell people like, hey, don't touch the website for the next like 3 hours. I'm working on it right now. And usually like, okay, that's fine. Or you can like look at what has been changed in the last little bit. And then I'll make my changes and then I'll just push that all live. But I know like, obviously you have a plugin that will allow you to selectively push stuff. Like, what does that look like for you or for someone who's doing like maybe a larger website?
Yeah. I mean, some of our customers actually will, you know, they'll pull down the site, make changes to the database, and then push it up to their production. We don't recommend doing that, because in the time between when you pull down and you push up,
yeah,
it's, you know, the production database may have changed, and so you could lose those changes. So as a general rule, we avoid encouraging that. But if you've got a brochureware site that never, the database almost never changes, you can kind of get away with it. But yeah, pushing the data up with Migrate is pretty easy. Like, you just install the plugin on both sides and you stick the connection info into one side, and which connects to the other side. And then you hit push and it sends your data over the wire from one plugin to the other, and over HTTPS, which is important. But yeah, other than that, that's all you have to do pretty much. And you can just push your data and pull it down as well. So.
Oh yeah. I always make sure that I take like 4 backups of the database, because that's kind of the scary button to push. I know it's part of the plugin where it will automatically back it up for you, but I always will go and do it myself, just cause like, that's always nightmare scenario when something could go wrong, because like the code I have in Git, and maybe we'll talk about that next, but the data isn't necessarily versioned like that. I know some CMSs have really nice versioning, like built in at a super low level. And that's a benefit of a lot of these new CMSs out there, where they start it from like a versioning. So anytime you update anything, you can always look back at the data and say like, okay, this had changed, and you always have access to the older version of that data. But that's not always the case in WordPress land.
No, I think the only versioning in WordPress is on the posts and the pages. Those are all versioned. So anytime you update one, it kind of saves a version of it. But yeah, but versioning is kind of a separate issue from backups, right? Because even if you have versioning, you're still going to want to create a backup of your site, right? And I would highly recommend everyone have, you know, hands off, just recurring backups going. And if you, if you're on a managed WordPress host, I would definitely make sure that they're working. Because the illusion of backups is more dangerous than not even having them on, right?
Yeah, right. I think that's like a common thing is that like, oh, I'm taking backups. Well, have you tried any of your backups? No. Well, I guess you're not taking backups then because you don't know if they actually work, right? And that that's something that I probably have never done that I'm like kind of terrified. I have regular database backups, but to be honest, I've never tried to load one of those database backups. And I think that's something that you got to do.
Right. I think there is some talk about automating the testing of backups too.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, you know, getting a report kind of on a regular basis, maybe it's weekly or monthly, that says, hey, we tested your backups and they work. You know, the zip files are not corrupted or like, you know. That's good to know, right? It's like one of those things, like the, you know, things are still running smoothly and, you know, so yeah, I think that's something that we're planning to do in the future for our new SaaS app called SpinUp WP. Like that one, we do daily backups currently for that app, and but we're not testing the backups. We're leaving that up to you right now. And I think most people are used to that. Like that's kind of the industry standard right now. There's very few services that are testing your backups and telling you that they're good. But I think that would be a nice kind of value add for our customers to have that reassurance.
Totally.
When I was in university, I did a co-op at an investment bank. And every 6 months, they would have a Saturday where someone would literally just go in and kick the plug and like they would see if they could get it back, right? Like if the worst case goes wrong and our investment machines go down, like can we get back up to speed? And they obviously did it on a Saturday when the markets were closed, but kind of a scary thing to try.
Yeah, that reminds me of Chernobyl.
Yeah,
because I'm pretty sure that whole meltdown was due to a test. They were testing the safety features of the power plant.
I like can't bring myself to watch the TV show now about it. Like I heard it's awesome, and I just like can't bring myself to do it. It's too gnarly for me to know like the realities of that situation. Oh, all because of a test. So hosting WordPress without some of these tools might be difficult, but hosting the front end of your headless WordPress site should not be difficult. And that's where we turn to services like Netlify. Netlify is our favorite host over here at Syntax. And let me tell you, you're going to want to try Netlify because this is one of those services that you try it and you love it. You log in, you select your repo, and you add your build steps, and it takes care of everything from continuous deployment to CDNs, to SSL certificates, and some more acronyms of all sorts of different types. Netlify is absolutely incredible. And we invite you to sign up at netlify.com/syntax and sign up, deploy a site, and then head to Twitter immediately and tell us just how surprised you were at how insanely easy this service was, because that's what everybody else does, even though we didn't tell them to do that, because it's that cool. So head on over to netlify.com/syntax and check out all of the insane features they have over there, including some of the new stuff like Netlify Dev, which allows you to have your entire serverless platform on your own laptop, and Netlify Edge, which is their new custom delivery network designed for Blazingly. They even threw Blazingly, and I think they need to add one fire emoji in there next to the word Blazingly, fast sites and modern workflows. So check it out, netlify.com/syntax. Cool. So let's get back into it.
All right. So we're going to talk about deploying as well as hosting WordPress. But before we get into that, I'm curious. A lot of people were asking about this, and I get questions like this all the time. Like, when you have a WordPress in Git, in version control, like what goes into your WordPress repo and what doesn't go into it? Like, what do you ignore and how does that look like? And I've heard different answers from absolutely everybody. I'm curious, Brad, what do you do for version control on a WordPress site?
Nothing. We don't do anything. No, I'm just kidding.
Folders, V1.
Yeah. Well, just a V1.
Yeah.
Old.
No, yes. I mean, the thing that you would ideally want, right, is only the code, your custom code would be in source control, right? If you've got some custom theme or some custom plugins, like that's it, right? It would just be that stuff. And you can totally do that. So the way we've set up our WordPress installs is we use Composer. So we'll use Composer to manage WordPress. So WordPress would be in a subfolder of the main directory. And Composer would be used to install it and update it. And then any plugins that are on the WordPress.org repo, we also use Composer to manage those. So there's actually a Composer repository mirror of the WordPress.org repo. It's called WPackagist. So it's WP packages. It's not WP packages. It's just one P. So
WP packages.
Yeah. WP packages.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So there's.
I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yes, please. So there's that. So if you need any plugins from .org, you can use Composer to manage those as well. And that pretty much licks it for you, right? Like if you've got Composer managing your core. If you've got a theme from .org, you could put it in there as well. But let's make this harder. Let's say you've got some plugins and themes that you've bought, okay, from a third-party vendor.
Yeah.
Now things get more complicated, right? Because there is no Composer repository for most of those. If you're using one of our products, there is. We actually have a Composer repository, so you can manage all of our products via Composer as well. But yeah, if they don't have that, then you're probably going to have to put it in Git, unfortunately. Either that, or you need to do a Git ignore and ignore it and just have it installed. And maybe you do your updates right on the server, or you update locally first, test it, and then update on the server once you've tested that it's all good. So yeah, it's a bit of a wild west. So we've been having a debate about this internally a little bit recently as well, because managing plugins in Composer works out okay if you don't mind deploying your site every time you need to update plugins.
Yeah.
Right? But let's say you've got, you know, the Yoast SEO plugin installed and it's every week. Every week you need to update. It could be, you know, if it's a blog or a site that's not that, you know, mission critical for you, do you really want to be doing a Git deploy or a whatever your deployment process is? Do you really want to be doing that every week for that site? Or would it be easier just to log into the dashboard and click update?
Yeah.
Right? If the answer is the latter, and for me it is, then I don't bother with Composer. I just keep the plugins installed on the server and just click update and, you know, test to see if my blog's broken, and it's not, so all cool, you know, carry on. So I find that less of a pain. But if it is a mission critical site or you're doing client work and you don't want downtime, then Composer gives you that extra control over the versions of the software on your site. So,
oh yeah, we should say for our listeners, mostly a JavaScript heavy listenership here, Composer is similar to like an NPM install, but you can use Composer to install PHP packages.
Right.
Oh yeah, I was going to tell a little story of I had that exact problem where. I had like when I was doing a lot of WordPress, I had like a starter WordPress. I had, and that was just on Git, like the whole WordPress core, all of my plugins, my base theme, everything. And I used that to like start a new WordPress. Every time I needed to do one, I would just clone it and that I would keep that up to date. And then I got DMCA'd by one of the paid plugins that I paid for custom taxonomy reordering plugin where you could drag and drop the order of a taxonomy. And then the author, rightly so, the author of that plugin DMCA'd it because then people wouldn't have to buy it. They just go on GitHub and download it. And I never figured it out. I just used it as a private repo from there on out because I could never figure out how to open source. Obviously, I could just open source part of it and then I'd have to like copy paste it. And I was like, too much trouble to allow the world to have access to this. And I just made it private for the rest of the time.
Yeah. So if anyone is interested in, you know, using Composer to manage their site, we've written a bunch of articles about this on our blog. So we can link those up in the show notes and people can consult them for trying it out.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think that's probably worth it because WordPress gets a lot of hate around, I think, because of how sloppy it can possibly be, because you have this issue of just data everywhere and plugins here or there. And a lot of the stuff we talked about, a lot of these problems. And for a lot of people who don't either know or care, they just kind of go for it. And it's the Wild West. And eventually something bad will happen. And then there's this other part of the WordPress world, which is like, people who are putting good time and resources and are good PHP developers trying to like solve these problems. And I think that's why WordPress sort of gets a bad rap in some cases, is people aren't willing to go the route of understanding what is Composer and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, I think you have a lot of people that maybe WordPress is their first foray into database development or CMS development or even application development with a server component. So just that aspect of things, you're inherently going to have some sloppier, newer coders coming in to try to work in these things.
Yeah, I think the PHP side of WordPress, which at this point is becoming less and less, right? Because WordPress project has really embraced React. Gutenberg, which is the visual editor that's basically taking over the entire dashboard, is all done in React. So the PHP side of WordPress is kind of shrinking a little bit, and kind of as things go forward, I think it'll shrink more and more and more, right? And hopefully the part that's, you know, the small part that's left gets updated and more modern as we drop support for older versions of PHP. That's really the thing that's holding the WordPress code base back, or has held it back, is that there's been this fanatical support for old versions of PHP, right? Like PHP 5.2 was dropped relatively recently, right? And 5.2, I think, is over 10 years old.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's crazy that we still supported that.
Yeah.
But the reality is you've got lots of web hosts out there running old servers with old versions of PHP still and old versions of WordPress. And so if WordPress did an update, that we would break all of those sites, right? So it has
a huge portion of the web would go down. Yeah.
Right. So that's the reason for it. But as the reason doesn't really matter that much to PHP developers who get in there and see the state of things and are just like, this is horrible. Yeah. You know, there's no namespaces. Object-oriented programming is kind of there, but not really. So it's in a pretty sorry state when let's say you're coming from the Laravel world. Like it's pretty shocking if you go from Laravel to WordPress PHP development.
And that's really the benefit of starting when Laravel started, right? I mean, they didn't have to deal with all this legacy that WordPress is forever indebted to.
Yeah. Well, and Laravel takes the complete other tack. Like when a new version of Laravel comes out, they're like, it's PHP 7 point whatever plus.
Yeah.
Like if you don't get with the program, too bad, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably a benefit to the audience that Laravel has, is that like it's mostly professional PHP developers using this thing, and they are able to say like, you know what? Moving along, we're going to keep on trucking. We're cutting this stuff. Here's your upgrade path. And I know there's even tools out there that will automatically upgrade it for you.
Yeah. It's great that PHP has, you know, end of life a lot of its stuff, and it has a much stricter end of life schedule now, where it's like, you know, I think it's PHP 7.1 is end of life next month in November. Already, right? I feel like PHP 7 just came out, but, you know, relatively speaking, you know, so like So they're stopping doing security updates, so which is also forcing web hosts to like take this more seriously and, you know, keep their servers updated and stuff. So it's all good.
Yeah.
So our new sponsor today is Hasura. They are instant real-time GraphQL on Postgres. Postgres is a very popular, highly scalable database. And Hasura is a GraphQL server that's going to sit in front of that and do all of the heavy lifting. It gives you the ability to get a GraphQL server up and running really, really quickly. It's pretty cool. You go to hasura.io and deploy one to Heroku just to get immediately up and running and started with it. And sort of the way that it works is that you go and create your data types and you can set up all your relationships, and they're going to give you an entire interface for working with your GraphQL server. They have ability to deploy to Heroku or to Docker, DigitalOcean, Microsoft Azure, AWS, Google Cloud, you name it. Like, I personally have seen this at a couple conferences and I've gotten a demo from them a couple months ago, but I think it's pretty nifty. And some points they've sent over for us to talk about here is that it's a real-time GraphQL database on Postgres. So you can either grab a brand new Postgres database, you can put it on top of an existing one that's out there. They have this concept of remote joins, which is pretty cool. And what that means is that they can configure relationships between independent GraphQL schemas. So you might have your own one, but you might also pull data from GitHub or from Stripe, and you can sort of just stitch that into a single schema, which is GraphQL. They also have authentication as a sort of first class support, which is pretty cool because, of course, these demos are neat, but you need to be able to secure down and lock down all of the data that they have there. Finally, they're working on making it super easy for developers to write custom business logic in REST API. So whether that's a serverless function, a microservice, something like that, and you can write those wherever you want and then expose them via your GraphQL. So you're looking to do GraphQL, definitely check out Hasura at hasura.io. And thanks so much to Hasura for sponsoring. Let's talk about deploying and hosting WordPress. So seems like you've made a company on hosting WordPress. And so I wanted to like sort of get your, not as like a big ad for your company, but obviously we're interested in. That's why we have you on here. But like what are your thoughts on like what's the easiest way to host a WordPress, or what's the best way to do it? And tell us what the SpinUp WP does.
Yeah. So I certainly wouldn't recommend SpinUp WP for everybody, right? It's not the magic bullet for every situation. So basically, SpinUp WP allows you to connect to a DigitalOcean server or a Linode server or any cloud server, anything with an IP address, really. And it will set up the server for hosting WordPress like really well. Like, it'll set up full page caching and just make the site run fast, like really fast. And so that's basically what it is in a nutshell. But the issue is you're kind of on the hook for making sure that that server, you keep the software updated. You don't
You have to babysit it.
Yeah, you have to babysit it. Exactly. So we try to facilitate that as much as possible. Like, that's our mission with this product, is to basically it's basically training wheels for developers that want to manage their own server, right?
Yeah.
So it's we're trying to make it much, much easier to manage your own WordPress server because there's some massive benefits you get from doing that. You get full control of the server, and you can tune it how you like. You can change the full page caching rules if you need to, which can really have a huge impact. So like, Just to give you numbers on that. So like a full page cached page can be served in like 30 milliseconds, right? Like a cached page. If it bypasses the cache and hits the PHP and the MySQL and the object cache, you're talking like 300 milliseconds plus, right? So like 10 times slower, right? And 300 milliseconds is a really low, that's a very conservative estimate. Sometimes it could be over a second to load a page. It really depends on the page and how much processing is going on. If there's already something in the object cache, if the object cache is primed or not, or if it has to go and query MySQL, it can really slow down that page load. And so when you're talking about the web, right? Like speed is everything. It's so important, right? So this is where I think Spin Up WP comes in. Like if you're looking for that kind of control and optimization and performance, and you're willing to babysit the server, then it could be a solution for you. But if you're not willing to babysit the server, then you really ought to go with a managed WordPress host, right? Because that's what they do. That's why you pay them the extra bucks, right?
Yeah. What are some examples of managed WordPress hosts so people know?
WP Engine is probably one of the bigger ones. I mean, GoDaddy, I think, is the biggest web hosting company in the world. And they're probably the biggest WordPress host in the world as well.
Yeah.
And then you've got Pagely. Pagely has been around for a long time. I think they were basically the original managed WordPress host before the term was really coined. Pagely has been around, and they seem like a really great host. In fact, I think if I needed a managed WordPress host, I'd probably go with Pagely. And then Flywheel, which just got bought by WP Engine, has been a big one. SiteGround is another one.
Oh yeah.
And Kinsta is another big one as well. And the list goes on. You know, there's a lot of managed hosts. Of course, WordPress.com really could be considered a managed WordPress host now as well, because you can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you can install plugins now on WordPress.com. So
can you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole thing is a little difficult though. The whole like managing your accounts and knowing where the sites are. I found the it's not exactly you have to log into here and then go to here and then here's your sites, but yeah. I think they maybe missed the mark on some of those usability aspects of nailing down multiple accounts.
I agree with you on that. They created a separate dashboard experience.
Yeah.
But you can't do everything in there. So sometimes if you need to do something, you have to bounce to like the regular WordPress dashboard. So it's yeah. That's the disjointed experience, I think, that you're talking about there. And so,
totally. Yeah.
So it is, yeah, I agree. I'm not a fan of that either.
Yeah. Oh, this is interesting, the Spin Up WP, because I think like we have this problem in JavaScript world as well, where you can go on one side of the spectrum and spend $5 on a DigitalOcean server and host it on that. But then you have to do everything yourself. You have to worry about backups. You have to pseudo apt get everything. And before you know it, you're a sysadmin. And then on the totally the other side of the spectrum is you can go like something like a Now or a Heroku or something like that, where it's all done for you. And that's great. And it's just a little bit more expensive. And I've always wondered like where's the thing in the middle where I can pay for the server space myself, but still have like something that will help me babysit this thing, because I don't want to have to worry about it too much. And that sort of seems what that is for. Is that right? That's where I'm trying to gauge it.
Yeah, that's a very good way to gauge it. That's a very good description of it. Kind of sits in the middle between managing it entirely yourself and the managed WordPress hosts. Kind of sits in that nether region that no one has filled until now, I guess. There has been, you know, we were very much inspired by Laravel Forge on this.
Yep.
And we were, there's tons of people that host WordPress sites through Laravel Forge, because it's a way to quickly get set up with a server running an optimized LAMP stack, right? But
yeah,
Forge doesn't go the extra mile for WordPress, because it's not what it's designed for. It's designed for Laravel apps. So we thought, like, what if we did go the extra mile for WordPress? What if we built Laravel Forge, but for WordPress? Like, what would that look like? Mm. What would be the, because essentially we're hosting a very specific app, what can we do beyond what Laravel Forge does? Because Laravel Forge doesn't know what app you're running. So it can't guess what you might need for that specific app.
Yeah.
But we can, right? We know it's going to be WordPress. So we can back up your site and your site files and your database, for example, right? Without any configuration needed, right? You just flip a switch, right? And so we can do all kinds of stuff. We can configure your full page caching, right? So like there's a bunch of really cool stuff that we can do knowing that you're deploying WordPress, right?
Mm, totally.
One of the other things we're gonna do that we haven't done yet is we're going to like send monthly or weekly emails that say like, hey, here's the things that you ought to be doing with your server, right? So for example, I mean, you guys have run servers before. So like, do you ever log in to the server and it's like, you have 162 software updates.
Yes.
And then your immediate thought is like, oh, maybe I should log in here a little more often. And then you never do.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Or something's going to break for sure. I'm not touching that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. So what we're thinking is like, what if we send a regular email that's basically gives people a little update on like how their server's doing and maybe some suggestions on what they should do to the server to like keep it in good health. So that would be like updating that software. Like for example, we just updated Nginx from 1.5 to 1.6 because apparently when Nginx comes out with a new version, the old version is basically deprecated EOL. Mm. And so there's no security updates for that. And it's like, we didn't even know that until recently. How would someone know that if they're managing their own server? You know, they probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
And so there's all these things that we feel like we're in a good position to help people like do and to have success managing their own server without the kind of anxiety of like, oh God, you know, what am I missing here? Mm-hmm. Like, what's going to happen to my server tomorrow?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's for those of us who aren't sysadmins or, you know, not used to dealing with those kind of vulnerabilities, that thing can be just super daunting and super terrifying.
I want to ask about deploying too. So obviously we talked about deploying a database, but like, what about the code for you? Do you use Composer for that as well? Or like, what's the process from you check in, maybe it's not even part of Git, but like, what does your deployment process look like from beginning to end?
Do you mean on SpinUpWP? Like if you're launching a site on there, you mean, or?
Or just maybe just in general for either using SpinUpWP or if you were just using like a,
right,
like anything else. Like if I've got a server and I've got a local WordPress, how do I get that on? Like, honestly, how I do it right now is I still use FTP. I just open up my FTP client, drag and drop the folder, overwrite the thing, wait for 45 minutes, and then it's live.
Yeah, we've become a bit more sophisticated than that.
You don't have somebody drag and dropping folders?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's been a while since we've been with that stage, but I mean, it's kind of our whole thing, right? That's our whole gig. So we use Buddy. Do you guys know Buddy? Buddy.works?
No.
Okay, Buddy.works is a great deployment tool. We use that. It FTPs for us. Assuming everything passes the tests before, you know, it does, you know, it compiles our assets, it runs a build and all this stuff. And then it just FTPs everything. And it's all based on the branch. So when we push to master, I mean, I guess we don't really push to master. We usually merge. I guess we merge like our develop branch into master and then push master. And there's a Git hook that fires at Buddy. Buddy's like, okay, I'll grab your latest. They should really use my marketing on this. Okay.
Yeah, Buddy. What a Buddy. Yeah, they need a little buddy character on here. Remember that was like the thing? MailChimp came out with their MailChimp, and then they were just like, you know what? Everybody needs a character. Yeah.
They tried to sponsor this podcast, Scott. I just searched them. I was like, that sounds familiar. They tried to sponsor the podcast, but we were sold out. So here's your free spot, buddy.works.
Buddy.works, great domain. And there's some good marketing tips. Get a character, whatever it is. Get a character.
Interesting. That's cool.
Well, if they see some signups from this, they'll be signing up for a year of sponsorship with you guys, right?
There we go. That is cool. So like, it's kind of like a continuous integration piece of software. It reminds me a lot of like a code ship. But
yeah, the design is great.
Yeah. I really like this lightning bolt.
It is. We actually were inspired by Buddy when we were designing SpinUp WP. Like we were like, oh, we got to do this like Buddy. Cause like they just nailed this UI on this, you know? So yeah, we're pretty impressed with their work there.
Yeah, it looks good.
Cool. All right. I think that's all the questions I have about this. Do you have anything else, Scott?
I don't know. This has been fascinating.
Yeah.
This is like hugely giant pain point in lives, people of working with WordPress.
Yeah. Like, I guess one thing I'll say that we didn't mention is I actually had a chat with the founder of Gatsby.
Oh, Kyle?
Yeah, Kyle. Because he was super interested in promoting SpinUp WP as a way to like get a headless WordPress site set up like really quick. And so apparently that's another good use case for SpinUp is headless WordPress, which is totally not what we were thinking of when we started building this like a year and a half ago.
Yeah. And headless WordPress with Gatsby is like, yeah, it's definitely great. It's a nice little way to build.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you think about like obviously our sponsor Netlify, how easy the front end is, and there's not a great WordPress story. There's lots of services we've got Sanity as one of our sponsors where it's super easy to get a backup and up and running. But if you still want to do WordPress, you still have to host the PHP somewhere, right? And that has to be done somewhere simply.
And I even recently hunted for a client of mine to do a client of a friend of mine to do a WordPress headless WordPress site install, and we just ended up going with some cheap, you know, Bluehost. I know you're not a fan, Wes, but just to have a thing. But then you have to, I don't know. It's definitely not as modern or as cool as it could be. So I think that's definitely a avenue worth exploring.
Yeah, I mean, if Gatsby's the one hitting the site, the headless site, I guess it doesn't really matter too much where it's hosted, right? Like, because it's not like direct traffic's hitting it, right?
No, it's just that build time.
It's the API, yeah.
Exactly.
Man, I'm just looking at the pricing. I'm just going back here.
Of
WP Engine.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have over 25,000 hits a month, so you have over a couple hundred hits a day, it's 115 a month to host your WordPress. That's expensive.
Managed WordPress hosting is... you're basically paying for support, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's really not even support. You're paying for support insurance, right? Because you don't necessarily need, you're not going to necessarily use support every month, right? So you're paying for insurance when you're buying managed hosting. So
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. And it's totally worth it for a lot of people. That peace of mind is worth paying for.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's just different cases, right? Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
True. Totally.
Cool. Anything else you want to, that we didn't talk about here?
No, I think that's great. I think we've covered lots.
One crazy question I had, I don't even know if this is a thing, have you heard crazy anybody question. Talk about serverless WordPress before? I know that Laravel just released Vapor, which is serverless for Laravel. Is that even something that could happen with WordPress? Do you even know?
The new hotness. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
we were pretty pumped when we saw that, excited about the Vapor announcement because it sounds so cool, right? Serverless. You don't need servers anymore. But at the same time, like my second thought was like, we just built a whole business on top of on top of cloud servers.
Servers, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, when I thought about sat down and like thought about it more, I was like, I don't know how the heck this would work with WordPress. Because when you're building an app, you can build it for a certain platform, right? Like you can build an app to take advantage of serverless functions, for example, right? But if you're installing a plugin from the WordPress.org repo, right, like you don't even know what it's gonna do, you know? Like, how could you possibly accommodate that on the infrastructure side, right?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time even wrapping my brain around how that would any of this would fit together, but
I think it would have to be serverless in the sense that like each request would still have to like execute pretty much like it does now on a typical server. So it'd be some kind of, yeah, so it'd be some kind of adapter. I don't know. I haven't done a ton of thinking about it, but the thoughts that I've had around it, it's like, I can't see around it. I can't see how it would work, how you'd be able to do serverless with WordPress.
Well, you could always just release it as a coming soon and collect some of that internet buzz, you know, and just never launch.
Yeah, or do an anti-campaign on it. Like, serverless is silly, you know, use spin up WP.
Yes, get some alliteration going on. Yeah, I get it.
You should make some t-shirts that say server full.
Yeah.
What?
I've also done a little bit of reading on serverless. And one of the things that I heard is that serverless can be really beneficial when you architect your app to take advantage of these external serverless functions. But if you just jam all of your requests through like one serverless endpoint, which is what Vapor does, it actually results in poorer performance. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So that's something to actually look at as well. So there's I haven't tested Vapor. I don't know if it suffers from performance or if it's great. I really have no idea. But it's something to look at for sure. Like, mm-hmm. are the costs of serverless going to actually be higher than if you architected your app to use serverless kind of sparingly rather than for every request? These are all questions that I don't know the answer to. It's early days for serverless, even on the app side. So I don't even know where that leaves WordPress.
Yeah, totally. All right. Now we have our sick picks. Brad, do you have a sick pick for us today?
Sure do. One of the questions I like to ask is like, what's like a purchase under $100 that you've had in the past? I think it's a Tim Ferriss question.
Yeah.
So mine is... a grill. So it's like a large grill. It's like 2 or 3 feet long, I think, and like a foot wide or something like that, or a foot and a half wide. And once a week, we do teppanyaki at home. So like I'll just, you know, cut up a bunch of seafood and vegetables and stuff. And my kids will actually cook their own dinner. They can't pronounce teppanyaki, so they just say, cook your own dinner. Are we cooking our own dinner? And they love it. It's like one of their favorite meals.
That's fun.
And it's great. Like, it's hard to describe like how good hot food is, like right from the grill. Like it's just way tastier. It's really good.
Oh,
have you ever made okonomiyaki on this?
I don't know what that is.
Oh, Google it. Okonomiyaki. Okay. It's sort of this Japanese savory pancake. It's almost like it's a wheat flour based batter, and it's got some Japanese sort of barbecue sauce and some fish flakes and all sorts of stuff on it. It's wild, and it looks kind of wild, but that's how they serve it. And if you go to Japan and get okonomiyaki, it's excellent on one of these types of grills. Awesome. So
this is cool. I want one of these. My wife, when we first started dating, I took her to Korean barbecue where you got like the thing the table barbecue, and she's like, this is dumb. Why do you have to cook your own food? And I was like, this is so exciting. I love cooking my own food. But she hated it.
Yeah, you would say that. Yeah, that sounds like something you would say. Can we get some charcoal in here, please?
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. I am going to sick pick something that I sick picked like probably 2 years ago on the podcast. And that is Magna Tiles. These are a kid's toy that we got for our kids a couple of years ago, and they're just these little plastic squares that have magnets in all four squares and all four corners, and allows the kids to make pretty much anything that their imagination can come. There's squares, there's little triangles, and then for gifts, we always get my parents and grandparents to get our kids like to get us like a big base or get us some wheels, or it's kind of like Lego, but they're way bigger. And it's like 2 years later and my kids play with them. I'm not lying, every single day.
Wow.
It's such a cool, creative thing. My kids are 3 and 4 now, and I imagine they've got still a couple more years left before they start to go for like Lego and stuff that's a little bit more intricate. But like my 2.5-year-old, 3-year-old, they no problem playing with these things. It's really cool.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, these are rad. I remember when you sick picked these before. Gotta get some. Landon's at that age now where he's gonna start to love this stuff.
we have mix and match. We have some Magna tiles and some Picasso tiles, and they're interchangeable, 100% interchangeable. So we don't, we can't even visually see the difference between them.
I love that the box says for ages 3 to 99.
Yeah, 100-year-olds, you're out. Nope. Gotta leave the room. Okay, my sick pick is going to be for the HBO television show Succession, which is, people are starting to take notice of the show right now. We just started watching it because it's so funny. This is like the constant progression of television shows with Courtney and I, as I'll like mention it to Courtney like months before, and then she'll be like, not interested. And then like, as months go by, she'll be like, seeing it on her Instagram feed or whatever. And then her friend so-and-so is watching it now, and her other friend, she'll be like, oh, maybe we should watch Game of Thrones. I'm like, I told you that like 3 years ago and you said you didn't want to watch it. So that's how Succession has gone. And she had enough of her friends start to watch it that she decided she would like to watch it. And now we're hooked. So we're about, you know, 6-7 episodes in and we're loving it. And a little side shameless plug or sick pick in addition to that is The Righteous Gemstones on HBO. I'm going all HBO out, I guess. The Righteous Gemstones on HBO is satirical comedy about like mega churches. And it's great. It's Danny McBride and Adam Devine. And it's hilarious. So those two shows on HBO.
Nice.
All right. Shameless plugs. Brad, what would you can shameless plug as much as you want.
I feel like I've been basically plugging everything already there. So you guys
plug it.
You guys go ahead. I mean, yeah, everybody can check out my stuff, spinupwp.com, deliciousbrains.com. So there's my plug.
Yeah, just start shouting URLs. That's what I do. My name is Scott Tolinski. I'm going to be plugging all of my courses.
Wait, and what's
you
your
can
name?
Find them at Scott Tolinski.
Okay.
And you can find those courses at Level Up Tutorials. You can find all, I'm going to be plugging all of my courses. It's the standard West Boss for Fane. So you can find them leveluptutorials.com/pro. Sign up for the year and save 25%.
I'll plug all of my courses as well. Westboss.com/courses and check it out.
Check it out.
All right. That is it for today. Thanks so much to Brad for coming on. And we will catch you on Monday.
All right. Thank you, Brad.
Thanks, guys.
Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.